In this particular Follow the White Rabbit, this is an extension of the Stormfront Conference. In the Stormfront Conference, I talked about the models of operation White Rabbit Radio has been under since day one, the templates of action, which I've never really talked about before outside of maybe Bob. But it's important. Success always leaves footprints. And I'm not talking about the success of White Rabbit Radio. I'm talking about the success we followed. When we reduce things down to basic memes, memes that have been forced down the throats of society, we have a couple models of late, in the past 10 years, specifically in the past 6 to 7, that have been used to move memes into the public sphere. One, blow-up style. It was blown up into the public sphere. The other has been moved into a conversation that's been forced in a very, very high level. And this is what I talked about at the Stormfront Conference. Things you can learn from. Things that we could use readily to make a difference in the pro-white activist area. The first is the meme, and I had everyone at the conference raise their hand. How many of you have heard global warming is a hoax? I'm guessing everyone that hears this has heard this. What most of you don't know is that meme single-handedly disarmed a whole main plank of the enemy's platform. Global warming is a hoax. It was moved into the public sphere in the last handful of years, very aggressively. They followed a template of alternative news and research. Alternative news and research is simply alternative explanations for what's going on around you. The Rents.com, Godlike Productions, some of it is mild, some of it is wild. I appeal to that crowd directly because that's the template of action I'm under. That crowd is by and large white. They have one thing going for them that we all want. They know that something's wrong. They don't agree on what's wrong, but they know something's wrong. And that's one good starting point if you ask me. They moved it heavily. Now, to back up, the global warming as a hoax goes back to the early 80s, actually. But they didn't go anywhere until the Internet came out. Once the Internet came out, they regrouped a handful of years ago and blasted it out in alternative news and research. Why? Because it's kind of a conspiracy. Global warming is a hoax. Global warming is a conspiracy. And they started hammering this meme, various different places, various different parties. The party that got it going was no bigger than Bug Swarm. And in fact, to this day, it's probably no bigger than the activists on the Swarm. And they blasted out that in a very fertile ground. What you're doing in the Bug Swarm is you're simply doing what White Rabbit Radio looked to do. We're looking to start fires. We're fire starters. The difference is that a template of action gives you the dry ground to start it on. We want to start fires on dry ground. We want to teach others to start it on dry grounds because it helps the fire get bigger and faster. And we want a fire so big, so fast, that no one can direct it, that no one can put it out. And that's what we're going to get. But that's what they got with global warming as a hoax. And the conference was a well-laid example because everyone in the conference raised their hand. But only one person at the conference knew anything extensively about global warming, where she could stand up for 5 minutes and tell us about global warming, pro or con. The rest of them just knew global warming was a hoax. And there's some pretty smart people at the conference. So it has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with the consistent messages. It has to do with the fact that sound is vibration. It has to do with basic physics. It has to do with the force of nature. And we're getting a single group to drive it into the population's memory banks. Global warming is a hoax. So global warming is a hoax ramps itself up. And anytime something like that ramps itself up and it can hurt the Al Gores of the world, well, other parties on the planet might look to take advantage of it. Before it's a consistent message, it means nothing. Once it's a consistent message being ingrained in the population, well, anyone, your enemy of your enemy is your friend. So anybody looking to take advantage of the Anglo-American elite is going to look to hammer that at some point in time. Maybe or maybe not. In this case, the Russian hackers just happened to hack a bunch of UK website scientists who basically were padding the numbers behind global warming. So basically, global warming, what? Became a hoax. They did this during a major conference that was happening over in Europe. We all know the story. Most don't know the template of action behind it. If the meme wasn't present, the Russians wouldn't have made that move. But now that the meme's present, well, why not hurt the people in charge in America? Now, of course, global warming is over with. Global warming is dead. They reformulated themselves just in the last 12 months to climate change. You're never going to hear about global warming as again. They lost the battle. They didn't lose it because they were rich. They had all the money. Al Gore's the global warming people have all the money. The climate change people now, they have all the money. They have all the academics in Western civilization. You're going to find very few outside of Russia that will speak out against global warming. They had everything on their side. They had the magic template. Very similar to what many pro-whites observe. They have the smart, stupid people like Al Gore that know everything. They have all the scientific... Some of these global warming guys can just scare you, some of these scientists, sitting on Bill Maher or all these different programs they have them on. So you have the smart, stupid people. Then you have the violent yahoos. You have the eco-terrorists. That's what they're called nowadays, the green terrorists, that believe that you got to burn down all the pipelines to get anywhere. Violence is going to achieve something. And you have the great paradigm that we see in various different activism across the board. Even in pro-whites exhibit this to some extent. You have the violent yahoos who think Rojava is going to solve something. And then you have the other part, the smart, stupid people, the academics, who think they're going to put out all these reports and whatnot and get somewhere. And the Al Gores, the global warming people, were taken right to the ground. They were taken right to the ground by people utilizing a very successful model, alternative news and research, putting on the broken record strategy and draining it into the minds of the populace and allowing someone else to come in and hammer them to the ground at the right time. And that will always work that way. Someone's going to take advantage of the situation. What the smart, stupid people miss and what the violent yahoos miss is what they always miss. They didn't control the message. Those that control the message control society. Those that control the message in any particular sector control that sector. They have all this wonderful global warming, climate change stuff, but they don't have a simple message that can be digested by the vast majority of the people. Other than we got to burn down all the pipelines and you got to listen to Al Gore. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You have to have the simple, effective memes that can move into the public psyche. Now, maybe with climate change, they'll get that down. Maybe as they reformulate themselves, they'll give us some simple memes for climate change. But once again, they're opening themselves up to the famous dilemma. Just because you have money and power in the media and the academia doesn't mean you can control the message. The internet, it makes it damn near impossible. You have to do all that and control the message at the same time. Very difficult to do against an aggressive group. And of course, the internet makes all this possible. So I'm not saying any of this to disparage anything. All activism follows the same models. You have those that think violence is a solution and those that think academics sitting around are going to get somewhere. Well, that's all wonderful, fine and dandy. Smart, having all the smart, stupid people on your side is fine. But you have to articulate that to the masses. If not, you leave yourself wide open to be burned. You could be right about everything, but if someone's going to sit there and call you racist and hammer you decade in, decade out, well, who's winning the war? Well, that's the way that works. Control of the message is everything. Terminology is everything. This is simply the basics. Another great example of this, it didn't result in someone hammering, well, it resulted in a combo, actually, is in the Fed. How many of you have heard in the Fed? In the Fed is something I'm guessing all of you have heard of. Many of you maybe even participated in. This was a simple set of memes against the Federal Reserve, unleashed quite a long time ago, but revamped again. Alternative news and research, finding fertile ground, setting the fire, letting the fire rise. And at the same time, of course, you have a lot of global angst against the Federal Reserve. That's nothing new. That's been around a long, long time. It's just fertile ground. It's a fertile group to run with that particular message. You have all these videos exposing Federal Reserve System, the difference between public and private central banking. I won't go into that here. Many of my listeners know I go into all that stuff. It's a very important conversation for whites to know about. But basically, in the Fed did something everyone thought would never happen. I've always been told it'll never happen. There'll never be a public conversation, a public debate of any consequence on the difference between public and private central banking. the difference between the Federal Reserve System and the Chinese bank, the difference between the Federal Reserve System and the Reichsbank, the difference between the Federal Reserve System and what the Founding Fathers did with colonial script. There's never going to be that conversation publicly. And lo and behold, at the International Monetary Fund, they've already had the conversation. They're having the discussion. They basically forced a public discussion, not with bombs, not by blowing up Federal Reserve systems, not by threatening people, not by writing academic papers. That's all wonderful. Believe me, there's plenty of writing out there about private and public central banking. They did it with a meme in the Fed. They forced a public conversation, and it's just getting the ball rolling, actually. It's still occurring on some level. Now, of course, there's a lot of outside pressure from the BRICS countries. There's a lot of outside pressure from all over the planet. But there's also a meme present, a very aggressive meme in the Fed over and over again. You see Bernanke, the head of the Federal Reserve, testifying in front of Congress, and he's turning the channel over to the gold standard and stuff like that, never addressing the basic questions. But at the International Monetary Fund, they've thought the need to address this publicly now, which is pretty shocking. It's pretty shocking. Very, very shocking. But at the same time, it's been done with, guess what? It's been done with a sound, it's been done with a vibration, and it continues to be done. It's done the way things are always done in this society, controlling the message. Controlling the message is always done with simple memes, simple words, simple phrases ingrained in the population's consciousness. And this, of course, was all done using alternative news and research as a starting point. Of course, from there it branches out into everything. One of the funnier examples I can point to is this British fellow, David Icke. And David Icke is a very controversial fellow. And in short, he thinks the people in power are shape-shifting lizards to some extent. And that's kind of irrelevant. What is relevant is that the actual shape-shifting lizard thing has been addressed at a very public level, at a high level, with Her Majesty Queen of England saying she's not a shape-shifting lizard in a television interview. The idea that she would even address that or have to address that or even want and feel the need to address that is actually funny. The idea that something could take a spin like that on the internet, just starting with alternative news and research, which is, again, it's very fertile ground to start fires. Also, David Icke came to my attention first when he was kicked out of Canada. He was not allowed to be in Canada because he talks about the elites being shape-shifting lizards. And the Jewish, I believe it was the Anti-Defamation League or whatever their organization is up in Canada, had him kicked out of Canada because they said this was a failed reference to the Jews. And I thought that was hilarious. You know, there's all these neo-Nazis showing up to listen to David Icke because he's talking about the elites are shape-shifting serpents and whatnot. I thought it was hilarious. But, again, this has been addressed at a very, very high level, even the Queen of England in a primetime television interview. And obviously she was doing it in jest. But the idea that she would even say it is hilarious. The idea that she would even discuss it or even feel the need to. But this has all been done via using alternative news and research to start the fires, for better or worse. Now, what other approaches do we know works? We know this works because we have a model, we have a template of action that is basically working for us right now. Is there room for other alternative news and research types of thing talking about white genocide? Yes. All kinds of alternative views on the economy, all kinds of alternative views on health, on environmental stuff. There's all kinds of alternative views on all sorts of different things. There's all kinds of room. And it all comes back to white genocide. It goes hand in hand. You just can't talk about it in every podcast, but you can always work it in where it needs to be worked in. That's the whole idea. So, yeah, there's plenty of room. There's all kinds of room. Another way we know that things work very aggressively is by using art, using a lot of art. We know that going back to the Soviet Union, and of course that works in our favor as well. It's interesting that this is Europa uses exclusively art, vis-a-vis video, and art can take many different forms. But they use exclusive art in vis-a-vis video making, and they're one of the largest Facebook groups. So that's kind of a no-brainer. We've looked to use art from the beginning to harness the imagination. Art tends to attract people that go on to attract large numbers of people. And that's the formula you want. You don't want to try to do everything yourself. You want that leverage of getting the message out there. Art, the more art you do, the better, is the way we look at it. I've got 3 art projects on the table right now. 2 animations, 1 not an animation that's a little out of the box. But I encourage others to think in terms of that too. You want something that people can see that can be leveraged over and over again, at the same time go on to attract those that are going to go on to attract those. So always art. And that could be just using Photoshop. Some of you guys are good at that. Whatever. Art is art. Look to utilize art, media, propaganda, all down one. It's all feeding at the same trough. And we're going to move along here. We're going to go on with a few Q&As to fill you in. But that was the basics of what I did at the Stormfront. I gave the template of action we've been using to the same success. It's actually moved at a very aggressive level. If you were around Bob's site 5 years ago there, and then you showed up, let's say, yesterday, there's been a big difference, a big change that's taken place over the past few years. It has nothing to do with us doing anything different. We're just attracting those that are going on to track those. It has to do with an anonymous model, a very effective model. We're going to address Samas.anonymous models next. We have a very effective model at a very effective time, and we're using a very effective template of action that others have used to drive it into the public consciousness to force either a public discussion and or a landslide or a bombshell like the Russian hackers pulled on the global warming people to such an extent that now it's just climate change. Global warming is no more. But that's effective. Success leaves footprints that you can usually follow. But we're going to move on along here and talk about the Samas.anonymous model. And then we're going to talk about watering down Whitaker and chickens and eggs. And then we're going to have, we're going to finish the question and answer between me and Truck Roy, the open discussion we had at the conference. In the next small piece, I'm going to talk about Samas.anonymous and some questions we've had about the Samas.anonymous model or anonymous model. The anonymous model is very effective because, well, it's very effective. When things become taboo in a society, you have to get the ball rolling, get people talking about things. It's much easier to do. It's much easier to do in an anonymous model. And furthermore, in many countries, it's illegal to talk about racial issues. Just in the past week, we've had a gentleman, Mr. Craig Cobb, who was starting a pro-white community out in North Dakota, I'm guessing it was. And he's come under fire. He's been all over the press, all over the world, because he was starting some quote-unquote neo-Nazi community. Basically bought some property in a small town. And he's a white fellow. He's definitely pro-white. And everyone knows he's pro-white. Well, very shortly thereafter, after coming to the media's attention, of course, again, and he's been in the media's attention before, and this time for just buying several different properties in one small town, he came to the media's attention, and shortly thereafter, he lost his job. Now, of course, he knows the score. He knows the game. He knows exactly what's going to happen. This ain't his first rodeo. And he had a very good job. He liked his job, but he lost his job. His boss told him to hit the road. And that's the way that works. The anonymous model is there for a particular reason. The enemy is always saying, well, you're hiding behind screen names. And I always point out the anti-white double standard. Every time some rapper yells about the death of the white race or genocide white people, you know, kill whitey, it's free speech. It's free speech. Every time some kid over in London picks up a Stormfront username and talks about race online because it's illegal for him to do so in public, you're sitting here saying he's hiding behind America's First Amendment. The fact of the matter is, and, you know, your job is simply to point out the double standard. Don't fall for their nonsense. Don't fall for their nonsense. In America, it's not as blatant as the gulag, at least not yet. Although in some instances it comes pretty close. And like in Mr. Cobb's instance, you're going to lose a job. There's a reason for the anonymous model. There's a reason it works. There's no point in getting yourself crucified. We have enough martyrs. We have enough martyrs. Obviously, if you're putting up a website, or even if you're posting something provocative on Twitter, there's been plenty of cases where bosses can find out who put something up on Twitter. I mean, especially if you're calling for something stupid like violence. But typically, the Samas.anonymous model is there for a reason. It works for a particular reason. It's working now for a particular reason. It's a natural process for people to come out in the open eventually. It's the way it works. It's like I said, you know, 40 million people have a Guy Fawkes mask. The mask is unnecessary. But at the same time, your job is to inspire those who are going to go on to inspire those, attract those who are going to go on to attract those. It gives you a great deal of leverage through society. And that's that particular spiel. So so many minutes, I talk about the Samas.anonymous model and a variety of different ways. You know, the main thing is for pro-whites to always leverage their activity and not fall into this ideal that you're going to have this big one-off event and make this giant impact. Now, the impact's made over and over again through small things. There's been no giant events with the bug swarm that's made impacts. It's a small variety of different events that lead to larger and larger catalysts that eventually become known. That's how that works. It's a trend you're starting. With that being said, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Samas.anonymous model. But I don't want you to fall into the anti-white double standard. Just point it out. There's always an anti-white double standard of free speech. And that is your job is to point that out. The next question I want to address is something about the Samas.anonymous model. What is the Samas.anonymous model? Samas.anonymous model is an anonymous model that helped bring down the Soviet Union. It's been used time and time again by friends and foes alike. George Soros used it to pass out information via copying machines all across the Ukraine and various different elements of Eastern Europe to undermine that. It's basically an anonymous. Everyone does things under anonymous terms. We've turned the model on its head, very similar to the Guy Fawkes mask and all that kind of stuff of anonymous, and put it in rabbit terminology. Now, when this created White Rabbit Radio, basically based on anonymous, based on the Samizdat model, if you will. Now, in this particular model, nothing's really necessary other than getting out information. We're doing something much more difficult than the modern-day anonymous, even than the Samizdat model of the Soviet Union. We're asking white people to defend themselves. And at a certain point in time, some will hold to the model, some will come out in the open. It doesn't really, you know, it's like we were asked about the SPLC article. It's like I told them, if you have 40 million people wearing a Guy Fawkes mask, the Guy Fawkes mask is unnecessary. It's necessary to get the ball rolling. Now, typically under this model, when I was first asked to do the podcast, I assumed it would just be up on Bob's site or another site indefinitely. In other words, there would be 12 podcasts or whatever to get the model rolling, to get the ball rolling. And or maybe even less than that, and no one would ever know who I am, and Bob would just basically be getting credit for the whole entire thing. Typically, that's how an anonymous model works, and if that would have happened, that would have went forward, and that's how it would have been, kind of like it was in the first 6 months. No one knew who I was or anything else, and as soon as you have a website, all that changes. So it's kind of like a quasi-model. But if you want to ever do an anonymous model, you just would copy what we did with Follow the White Rabbit, put it out through third party, third, fourth, and fifth parties, and just keep your voice guy hidden, whatever. It's very simple to do with Dropboxes and everything else. Now, in regards to this model, is America just like the Soviet Union? Yes. Yes, it is. It's a closed system. It's not quite as closed. You have the illusion of being open because simply they wait for anyone to come out with free speech and they just lose their jobs, they lose their livelihoods, they, you know, you have various different things going on. But most of the things are breaking down. So it is like the Soviet Union, but it isn't. In the UK, I would say it's more closely like the Soviet Union. One wrong word on a tram and you go to jail. Typically what happens when you get the type of people asking this type of question, let me give this person a word of warning, is you go to your first white nationalist meeting or your second white nationalist meeting, you're all gung-ho and you want to do stuff. You want to do stuff out in the open. You want to march up and down the street, and that's fine. That's wonderful. But typically you want to channel your action into very effective, channel your action into means, into down paths that are most effective. Most of the stuff activists want to do in this type of society are ineffective. The best stuff we have are all internet-based. It's all art-based, like I've already talked about. The more art you do, the better. Or it's going to be alternative news and research-based. Those are models we have right in front of our face that are working, that are effective, that have worked, that are effective based on the past. We don't really have a model for large public stunts that are effective. Large public stunts by pro-whites typically results in martyrs and lawsuits, neither of which are effective at getting out a message. They get out the message regarding what the violence was over, and you'll never get the pro-white point of view. Now, granted, we have a great media online that can spin events, but at the same time, you're not going to get any sympathy, if that's what you think. You might get sympathy from the crowds, whatnot. You know, I'm all for doing anything when it comes to getting out a message, but I don't have hundreds, if not thousands, of hours to waste on low-margin activity that can render nothing but low-margin results. In other words, if I don't have a model, if I don't have a track record or proof that it's going to work, I'm not going to spend lots of time on it. It's kind of like, you know, spending thousands of hours doing anti-racist Hitler, putting that together, having to retool it two and three times to get the thing done, or putting together some big seminar, some live seminar. Well, that would be stupid to do the live seminar. Live seminars have very low results typically compared to art in this type of function. I mean, you don't want to meetings over art is a no-brainer in my mind. Others would say, well, you got to have meetings, got to have this. Typically, when you want to have meetings, and there's lots of talks about a bug swarm meeting, stuff like this, I would do something technologically based. I would do something off the wall. I would do something totally new that doesn't compromise everybody. Compromise everyone time-wise, money-wise, and everything else. Meetings are done to show the enemy you can have a meeting. That's why Stormfront was done. Stormfront is not done. That meeting has not been done 3 years in a row. just for the hell of it or just to get together and eat. It's been done for political purposes to show the enemy that we can have a meeting. Now, if your objective is to show the enemy that you can have a meeting, you remember in the Soviet Union, they did things like this too. They put together all these different anonymous type meetings, get-togethers, whatnot. The idea was to create fear at the top that we could meet if we feel like meeting. If you're doing a meeting to show the enemy that you can have a meeting, the last thing you want is for that meeting not to come off. And that's one of the challenges. If you're doing a meeting for public show, well, you got to make it public. But that's not necessarily, you're not guaranteed a meeting. The last time I saw a pro-white meeting, that they attempted to do that, you know, just to put on a public meeting, they had about 400 register, which is great. Less than 200 ended up attending, and they had five different venues canceled because of bomb threats and everything else. The FBI wouldn't investigate in America or anything like that. That's such a hassle. And no one wants to come to that. Then the next one, of course, no one even wanted to come to because it was such a hassle. So the idea of having a meeting in this type of society is to show the enemy that you can have a meeting. And then, of course, you want to have a meeting. You want the meeting to come off. You want it to make it big as possible. But, of course, it has to be a closed meeting. This is always the debate. And it is a very time-consuming thing, very much a hassle. More hassle goes into these Stormfront-type seminars than anything I've ever seen, just because of the nature of it. But it did come off. The enemy knows we have meetings when we want to have meetings. That's the whole entire point. The point is not to... You know, a lot of times things are done, propaganda is done, not necessarily to speak to your audience, just to speak to the enemy. A lot of times things are done for that particular reason. It's very effective. It's very effective in making moves behind the scenes, so on, so forth, etc. But anytime you have these young guys or gals, they go to their first or two Stormfront meetings, or pro-white meetings, they get all gung-ho and they want to do these big spectacular events and stuff like that. That's fine, that's dandy, just understand that you're a depleting asset. If you do things that are ineffective, there is so much burnout in pro-white activism. And the reason there's so much burnout in pro-white activism is, one, we don't give people the simple things to do. Well, at White Rabbit Radio, we do. We give them what to say when called a racist. That's the first thing you do. But they don't give people the simple things to do, and they themselves don't do the simple things. They think something's based on some dramatic coming out, some dramatic torch-like parade, some dramatic event. And in using the Samizdat model, the one thing is important is there is no dramatic event that led to the fall of the Berlin Wall. It was all the little things. This type of system dies from 1,000 little cuts. It's not dependent on dramatic events. It's not dependent on that in any way, shape, manner, or form. And that's what's difficult for a lot of people to understand. You know, okay, we had this meeting. We got to do bigger meetings. We got to talk to the public, and the public will respond, and, you know, the press will come on, and blah, blah. It's all this, like, type of fantasy, type of dreaming that it never really occurs that way. Although, I guess, one time it could, and that would be wonderful. But that's, like, low probability. Low probability. Dreaming is always low probability events. The basics are revolved on just that. Simple little things over and over and over again at the local level. And of course, as far as various different types of video conferencing, the video conferencing technology to have Bob come on screen and speak is very much there, if Bob can get his video camera working. and I'm sure he could for such an event. That's easy. Video conferencing where you can actually pan and have different people show their face and speak from the audience works within a small number, but the large number type solutions for that, the large audience type participation in a video conferencing, I think are terribly, terribly expensive, but I don't know. I don't know anything about it. So that is the Samizdat model. It's an anonymous model. It's not dependent on anyone being anything other than Peter Cottontails. We know the model. I know it cold. The leadership naturally comes outward as it wants to come out, where people want to do videos with their face on. People want to be known. But it's not dependent. It's not dependent on large participations having to do that. It's not dependent on that at all. If it were, the Soviet Union would still be in place. If it were, anti-racism is a code word for anti-white, wouldn't be out there in the search engines. White genocide wouldn't be making its way through society. It's not dependent on any of those things at all. So don't have any misunderstanding. That is a natural process. Anonymous, the group Anonymous is asking people to do illegal activity. We're not. So you're going to get more and more people putting a face on our stuff than you would, let's say, Anonymous. But even Anonymous has spokespersons that are known. That's just the way it works. You know, you're not going to be anonymous with a website. You're not going to be anonymous very long if you put out something like anti-racist Hitler or speak at Stormfront conferences. This is just common sense. So that's a little bit about the anonymous model. And the templates of action around the anonymous model, it's a natural process for people to want to come out and do things. It's a natural process for people to want to be gung-ho after their first, second, third meeting or when they first get going. You just don't want to go over the top, channel thousands of hours into an activity that ends up with a low, with high expectations, that ends up with a low probability of success. And in my opinion, anything you do with a consistent message is fine. Just don't keep doing the same thing over and over again if you're not getting good results. But I typically channel all my activity, all my energy, because I have limited amount of time, into very high probability channels, whether it be art, whether it be models, templates of actions we know work, like alternative news and research, and I encourage others to do the same. But I don't, you know, I'm always asked, why not this, why not that? And I always say, do it. You know, go ahead, do it. You know, I can only give you the models. You can be thick-headed, you can be hard-headed, you can try to do whatever you want. The last thing I want are pro whites burning out. But if that's what you want to do, you want to go down that avenue, go ahead. Just don't keep doing the same thing over and over again just because it gets you attention, just because it feels good. Doesn't mean you're doing anything spectacular to get out a message. It's the little things that work. It's not the big things that threaten this type of society. It's the little things. And most of the time, the average pro-white thinks in terms of doing things to try to reach some spectacular audience. That is, there's no possible way you can guarantee that other than luck. The only thing you can guarantee is reaching someone who can go on to reach someone. That's it. You want to influence those who go on to influence those. That is the basics that Bob will always teach. You want a type of amplification. You want a type of leverage. And that leverage comes in with lots of participants doing little things over and over again. You don't want to dream on doing anything spectacular. Do the basics over and over again. Reach those who are going to go on to reach those. That's done through art. That's done through effective models. It's not done through giant grandstanding. Giant grandstanding, get your name out. It can get you in the press and get our message out. I'm not discouraging from you. I don't care what you do. I'm just giving you the basics, the high probability activity in the medium to long term that's sustainable, that helps bring down this type of system. We know because it's been done. It's in the process of being done here. Next question. Horace, why don't we use the term displacement or replacement? Because you're at war. You have to understand one concept, psychological operations, psychological warfare. One, anytime you observe in any endeavor, by the way, you have on one end of the equation massive anti-white propaganda. Quentin Tarantino is making movies about whites just being murdered. This is a fact out in Hollywood just in the past year. You have every day you have anti-white propaganda. That propaganda is matched with, guess what? Massive anti-white terrorism, anti-white crime. You have a neutron bomb that has already went off, open borders into white countries and only white countries. All this in one big mix. You have psychological operations. We know it's warfare, actually, because rabbits are dying. White rabbits are getting whacked right, left, and center. Every day I turn on the news, the Drudge Report, and some white guy or gal or kid is being murdered by, guess what, usually a non-white, sometimes an illegal immigrant. And this is all encouraged, right? Just watch a Quentin Tarantino film. So in this type of equation, when you're at warfare, that's what psychological warfare means, and it is warfare because we're dying, you don't want to water down Whitaker. And that's what displacement, replacement, that is all watered down Whitaker. You don't ever want to do that. You're not going to hear Bashar al-Assad being described in Fox News. You know, Bashar al-Assad just displaced some Syrians. Bashar al-Assad just replaced. Yeah, he's replacing the rebels. No! You're going to hear genocide. You're going to hear ethnic cleansing. You're going to hear warfare. Those are terms of war. Those are honest terms. In our case, genocide is a very honest term. Look it up. Look at the definition. Look at what's going on around you. But when you see psychological operations and we're dying, white rabbits are dying, that's a fact, you're dealing with psychological warfare on a massive level. You have to be intellectually honest. You're also going to have to use caustic warlike terms to reach the population you want to reach. I mean, in alternative news and research, if you were to say displacement or replacement, they're going to yawn at you. You know, how does that sound all that violent? No. I remember a long time ago talking to some gentleman from the South, and he thought the Mexicans were going to come in here and replace him and pay his Social Security and everything else. And, of course, if you were to watch a Quentin Tarantino film and you were to look at any of the reports coming out of these terrible tragedies coming out of nursing homes across America, you would realize very quickly how delusional that is. That is propaganda. Don't use the enemy's propaganda. Yeah, these Mexicans are just going to replace you. You're being displaced by Mexicans. They're going to pay your Social Security. No, they don't have that in mind at all. If they did, you'd see propaganda like that out of Hollywood. We see what we see are psychological warfare, mealy-mouthed terms like that coming out of the enemy, phrases, matched with massive propaganda, basically pushing non-whites toward more and more violent behavior toward whites. We've always seen this contradiction. That is psychological operations. It's ended up in massive violence. It just is. And it is psychological warfare. Let's not be delusional. In war, you don't use mealy-mouthed terms like displacement, replacement. You'll never hear them in warfare because it's inaccurate. We hear words like genocide, ethnic cleansing. That is much more applicable. Yeah, someone's at war with you. If you don't realize that by now, well, just hang it up. They want to use terms like, oh, you're just being displaced. You're just being replaced. It's just, it's all make-believe. No one could have foreseen this. Every day on the news, the difference is now that someone's reporting it, we're seeing the average newscast on Fox News or the Drudge Report turning into American Renaissance, Color of Crime. Well, it's about time, but it's been like that for decades. Keep your eye on the ball. Don't use watered down Whitaker. If you're at war, and any time you have psychological operations matched with some type of natural phenomenon, and real or imagined or manipulated. In this instance, we have a manipulated phenomenon of immigration, assimilation, forced and open borders for white countries and only white countries, matched with massive propaganda provoking violence against the population. Well, you're probably dealing with some type of warfare, namely psychological warfare. And we have to call it warfare because we keep on dying. Yeah. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. Don't ever water down Whitaker. You'll look like an idiot in the long run, and it's just a bad ideal. Replacement, displacement, no. Don't use the enemy stuff. It's not all that, replacement, displacement sounds rather benign. There's nothing benign about what's going on. There's nothing benign about it. And you look weak anyways doing it. If you're at war, you imagine the rebels on the Syrian side of the equation, or imagine Bashar al-Assad saying, we're just displacing people. No, they're talking about getting killed. You know, Bashar al-Assad's threatening to wipe out everything in the Middle East to cause a huge fire in the Middle East that emblazes everything. These are war. It's war. In war, use appropriate terminology. You also want to be as descriptive as possible. Genocide is the best legal description under international law of what's going on. Now, why do we use that, Horace? Are you thinking the United Nations is going to come out and do this or that? No, what would probably happen to blow it up is someone at the United Nations would point out the contradictions of what's going on in Western civilization to poke their fingers in the eyes of the Anglo-American elite, Jew and Gentile alike. The people that brought down the Soviet Union were talking about the Soviet Union was not a workers' paradise, or why would a workers' paradise have to have guards at the border to keep people from leaving? They weren't actually interested in workers' paradise. We're pointing out the contradictions at the highest level possible. We're not interested in taking over the UN or anything like that, any more than the people that brought down the Soviet Union were interested in a workers' paradise. We're interested in bringing down the whole entire structure, and that involves the contradictions at the UN as well. We're simply pointing it out. I'm going to discuss one last thing, and then we're going to do a Q&A with Truck Roy and continue on the conversation from the conference that was going on behind the scenes and whatnot. The conference cut off our Q&A a little bit earlier to get back on course, but we're going to continue this in a few minutes. But one other thing I'd like to talk about is, in the movie The Hunt for Red October, there was a famous scene where they disarmed a missile. And the way they disarmed a missile was fired at the submarine. And what they did was they turned right into the missile. By turning into the missile couldn't arm itself. It couldn't arm itself to activate to explode. And so by turning into the missile, they basically disarmed it. And the missile didn't blow up the submarine. It's a pretty dramatic scene if any of you have seen The Hunt for Red October. And the dissidents have been doing this for quite some time. And Follow the White Rabbit, number one, I talked about dissidents, some places in Texas and whatnot, that could say, yes, I am a racist. Paul Weston put out an excellent video demonstrating this point. You know, only whites can be racist. All whites are racist forever. And you can play a variety of different games with this. We, of course, teach people to defend themselves from the word racism by saying, in your opinion, I'm racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. But there are dissidents that aren't worried about it. There are dissidents that aren't worried about it or that feel it's not out of necessity just to try to disarm the torpedo. There's certain periods of time that can be very effective, like right now. Other times it's obviously counterproductive. Or it can make you lose your job. But if you're a pro-white dissident out there, what does it matter? That's right. What does it matter? It's just a matter of personal choice. So there's two words typically we're going to deal with in that particular equation. One is racist. Some dissidents do that. Yeah, I'm a racist. And we, of course, teach people to do something else because funny things can happen to you if you live where Paul Weston lives on the streets of London and you say something like that. He could go to jail for putting out that video. Obviously, that's counterproductive. But at the same time, he's a big boy. He's a pro-white dissident, or at least a white dissident. I don't know how pro-white he is, but he sounds pretty pro-white to me. Or it sounds like he's moving that direction. And he put that out, and he's a big boy, and that's his particular agenda. There's another word as well called anti-Semite. And anti-Semite is a word, is another torpedo. Two basic torpedoes you're going to come across. Racist, and we move around the word racist. We move around the torpedo. We move around the torpedo. Others move right into it. When it comes to the word anti-Semite, well, yours truly moves right into it. I move right into the torpedo. I don't care. There are periods of time in Western civilization where you could not get elected if you weren't an anti-Semite, and there's periods of time, like just recently, where you won't get elected if you are. Anyone that disagrees with the Jewish elites is going to be an anti-Semite. If you're putting out, saying the type of things Barbara Ann Spector said to a bunch of white people, we're generally on a collision course. You know, we're on a collision course. There's no use in hiding that. I was asked why, you know, I would call myself that. Well, if you're a fan of Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit, you're a fan of the White Rabbit Radio, we're the ones that put you on message or expose you to Bob Whitaker or whatever, you know I'm not going to dodge that question. Some people say, well, in your opinion, I'm an anti-Semite. You're just saying it because I'm opposed to Jewish supremacism. Anyone opposed to Jewish supremacism is always called an anti-Semite. That's fine. Some people are just going to come out and say, yeah. You know, I believe everyone deserves a home. It means I believe Jews deserve a home, somewhere they can Judaize each other. But I also believe Jews should go to their home. You know, I don't like being Judaized. You know, you pull Bob Whitaker. You can pull right into the torpedo, disarm it. That is a personal thing. Typically, when it comes to the swarm, when it comes to the mantra, we do the direct opposite of what dissidents do. Dissidents, you know, you got the chicken and the egg. Dissidents like talking about chickens. Why chickens lay eggs? We talk about this giant egg. Forget about the immigration. Forget about the multiculturalism. They all make up one giant egg called white genocide that the chickens laid, the anti-white chickens laid. We talk about that egg. That's what affects people's life. People walking down the street aren't really affected by news and Jews, so to speak. They're affected by the eggs. We talk about the eggs. But eventually the conversation moves to the chickens. Why chickens lay eggs? So if you're running around with bug swarm putting up the mantra, you don't have to worry about chickens. Expose the eggs. The eggs gets people talking. You know, this giant white genocide egg that they've laid. That's the whole ideal. And who lays an anti-white chickens? The big portion of these anti-white chickens are, of course, Jews. If you're putting up a website, a pro-white website, you're not going to be called. The odds of you being called by your average white person are nil. The odds of being called by one member of the Jewish elite faction, Team Pink Rabbit over at the SBLC of the ADL, are quite high. Right? That's what they do. So if you're going to have a website, there's no point in hiding your head in the sand. There was one American Renaissance conference when someone said, we act like they don't exist. Well, I don't. If you're asking me about them, I'm going to be very straightforward. I don't care that they're going to call me an anti-Semite just because I disagree with Abe Foxman or Barbara Ann Spector. I don't care. There's a handful of different ways to disarm it. I'm going to move right into torpedo. Now, if you're posting on the bug swarm or something like that, it doesn't really matter. You're never going to get asked the question. If you're putting up a website, you better have a response. You better have a response or you're going to lose credibility. You're going to have egg on your face when you want to have egg on the enemy. They use that big torpedo to fire at people. Well, we move right around it or we move right into it. But if you're going to have a website, you might want to think about how you're going to address that. I don't care that everyone disagrees with Abe Foxman as an anti-Semite. That's fine. That's self-reinforcing. It's also self-defeating at a certain point in time. Anyone with any common sense understands that. So that's a little thing on the chickens and the eggs. Now, most of the dissidents want to focus on the chickens. There's a reason for that. Chickens lay eggs. We focus on the giant egg that they lay. Everyone can see that it's laid. Everyone can see. Generally speaking, white genocide affects the lives of average Americans all the time. Jews don't directly. It's indirect. You know, the anti-white, this anti-white element of the Jewish elites, which is all of them basically, lay those eggs right, left, and center. The eggs are what people focus on. And that's good, because that's what they can relate to in their day-to-day life. Mark, make no mistake, chickens lay eggs. Anti-white chickens laid this big egg of white genocide. And the largest faction you're going to be dealing with is, guess what? Abe Boxman and Company. The SPLC, that's just the way it works. That's just reality. You're going to run from that, that's fine. Don't put up a website disclosing white genocide. On the other hand, you know, you've got some of these literalists interpreting every word Bob says one way or another. The fact of the matter is Bob doesn't run from it at all. In his book, he just talks about the eggs. Why Johnny Can't Think. He talks about these eggs that they've laid. He talks about white genocide in a way that the average people can relate to. But obviously anyone talking about eggs for any length of time is going to realize chickens lay them. It's just common sense. Without further ado, we're going to be talking to Truck Roy. We're going to continue on this Q&A, and he's heard everything I've said thus far, so this should be a lively conversation. This is H. Avenger. I'm back with you here with Truck Roy. We're going to continue the Q&A from the Stormfront Conference. We got cut off a little short. Dr. David Duke wanted to put the conference back on schedule, and so we got cut off maybe, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes short. What do you say, Truck?
Yeah, about that.
So we wanted to, I wanted to continue to fill you guys in on what we were talking about. We're talking about successful models, things that you can look at, that we're looking at, people that have done what we're doing right in front of us. Although they're not as explosive, global warming is not as explosive topic as, say, race. At the same time, it's still the basic, they're achieving the basic goals, the basic results we want to achieve.
Right, and the model holds, the template holds.
Yeah, no doubt about that. No doubt about that. Is there anything else you wanted to add before?
Yeah, I wanted to mention a little bit what I was talking about there, which this is always a danger, which is tailgating, and particularly is it appeals to a person's ego. You know, if you start having success with the talking points, and if you're delivering them well, you will. And I talked about a specific example that I had a couple months ago where I had a small audience and I was really kicking somebody's butt with the talking points. And the temptation is always to think for a second that you're smart and that you can blow away this guy on any topic. And so he doesn't want to talk about race anymore, or he wants to move the topic into a different direction because he's losing. I like the example that Bob Whitaker uses. It's like a caterpillar on a frying pan. He wants to get off of there. And he wants to get off of your topic, and so he's going to try to lead you in another direction, and your ego's kicking in. You're saying, wow, I'm kicking his butt with these talking points. I can kick his butt on that topic he wants to talk about, too. So the guy I was talking to tried to lead me astray, and we were talking about white genocide, and he says, well, now your dogs, the mutts, the ones that are mixed breed, are actually healthier than the purebred dogs. And this set off big alarm bells in my head because I'd been listening to your podcast, Horace, and I knew that new studies showed that is not true. Actually, purebred dogs are healthier.
The idea that mutts aren't healthier has been disproven now.
Right, and I just heard you talking about that. So, you know, I want to let this guy know my knowledge, you know, but then I realized that he was taking me off topic. And to explain about these studies would be tailgating. So
that has nothing to do with white genocide.
Right. So I just
it's interesting, but
it's interesting. And so I said to him, I said, really, man, that's your best argument for genocide? And that brought me right back to topic. And and that's the typical situation you'll run into. You're doing well, and you think, hey, I know some important piece of information I can wow this guy with. And then you get off a topic. And so my little bit.
It's really dangerous for pro-whites, too, because generally you're facing an audience that is so disinformed and so full of facts that aren't actually facts.
Right.
And so you have a tendency to want to correct them, but none of that has really anything to do with, like, genocide, whether or not mutts are pure breeds are better, but that just happens to be true. now.
Right,
you know.
And, you know, in this particular situation, this was the ideal situation. I had an audience. I had, you know, 7 or 8 people there, and I had someone going against me from a very anti-white position, and the guy was like a political correctness officer. I mean, he was actually had some professional debate experience. And so this was an opportunity to humiliate him and make him look stupid, not to educate my audience. And you've got to understand your situation, and if you're in that situation, don't try to educate people. Just humiliate your opponent and let them take it from there.
Yeah, yeah, that's, you know, keep it simple, I guess. Everything's for the audience you're in front of, you know. That's really what it is about. You know, sitting there beating them over the head doesn't really make sense unless it's in front of an audience.
That's right. And, you know, we had an audience there when we were doing our presentation that is like a lot of pro-white people. They're intelligent and engaged. And we were cut off a little bit short, but we did have a good question and answer and a good back-and-forth seminar sort of.
Well, they played Anti-Racist Hitler, too, which took 10 minutes. So, you know, I forgot about that. That's what they did do. Just so you guys know, they played Anti-Racist Hitler. We had 2 large screen TVs that were playing Anti-Racist Hitler during the conference, during the beginning, prior to me and your presentation.
Right. And, you know, as you talked about earlier in this Fall of the White Rabbit 76 here, you know, these conferences are to show that you can put on a conference, and we did that. Aside from that, you know, I mean, obviously we can communicate all this information on the internet, you know, on Skype, on Bob's site, through your podcast. And so, you know, there's a social aspect to these and, hey, you know, we can pull off a meeting sort of thing. But if we never have another one of those again, it doesn't mean we'll be any less effective.
No, I think, yeah, that's one of the reasons you do a meeting is to tell the enemy you can do a meeting. That's for sure. And also there is some sense of community. Some people are really big into community, getting face-to-face. I don't have a problem with that necessarily, other than one of the challenges of war around the world. What they're starting to do now, just to make an announcement for listeners, is they're going to try Minerva. I know her real name. Her real name's Laura, which I don't think she doesn't care if anyone knows that. The lady putting it on, the gal that putting it on, I know quite well. I've met her. Truck Roy's met her. I've also met relatives of her a couple years back. Relatives of hers, like them all. But anyways, she's starting to help Bob put on video conferences over Skype, and I don't really know how it's going to work exactly, because there's I know you'll be able to see Bob at least, but I don't know how many others you're going to be able to see, because I know Skype is limited, I believe at least. But anyways, they're looking at doing video conferences, and they're starting to do the first one in the next month, I'm guessing. So you might want to head over to Bug Swarm and check that out. But, you know, video utilizing technology makes sense. One of the problems with meetings is you have to have closed meetings. If you have an open meeting, someone calls in a phony bomb threat or a real bomb threat, next thing you know, the whole thing is canceled. It's, you know, that's one of the challenges with the internet is anyone get a phone number and assume an anonymous identity and call in a bomb threat. If the FBI is not going to investigate, there's no barrier to entry to doing it, like they did at that one Stormfront conference a handful of years back. So closed meetings, you got to have a closed meeting if you're meeting publicly, unless you want to have a high probability of it not occurring. The problem with those, though, it's hard to get a lot of people out. It's a closed meeting. And so having video conferencing makes a lot of sense to me, simply because you can't call in phony bomb threats. I don't know what technology glitches could happen, but at least you can't shut it down with phony bomb threats and stuff like that, you know.
Right, and, you know, the anonymity that the internet affords us an opportunity to get a lot more people involved that don't want to risk their jobs or anything like that. And the model that we use with the Swarm and stuff is, you know, it's not an ego-based leadership organization model. It's completely flat model, you know, everybody.
Yeah, most people don't understand, but the Samizdat model, the anonymous model, the model that they use in the Soviet Union, the model that Anonymous uses, I mean, people become spokespersons, and, you know, names of dissidents get known, but by and large, most people listening can't really tell me, you know, who was spreading what in the Soviet Union. It's a totally anonymous model. It's not dependent on the things that we think they're dependent on. It's not dependent on big marches with people standing up until the whole thing comes down, really. That happens after the fact. Even when we talked about global warming as a hoax, no one listening can tell me who started that. I'm going to guess, no, without you doing your homework, you can't even tell me who got the ball rolling online. That was another quasi-anonymous model. Well, you really got to do your homework to see who got the ball rolling, but that's how this stuff works. So it's not really all that necessary, but it is an eventuality that people want to meet and that certain things happen. Certain people become known.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know who I first heard global warming is a hoax from, but I did hear it from someone, and that's how these things work. And, of course, because they're a meme that gets repeated over and over again, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, it doesn't lend itself to the ego-based kind of organization stuff, although it works its way into that as well eventually. You know, your reward is not going to be, hey, you were one of the early guys that used this, you know, we're going to build a statue for you. The reward is in itself kicking an anti-white's butt with the talking points, and that's reward enough for me. I love it.
Right. Right. It changes the whole dynamics. That's the whole idea, is to change the dynamics or force a very public conversation, kind of like in the Fed is doing at the IMF and everything else. There's a variety of different approaches. Our issue is a little more explosive, so it could take on a few different forms. But by and large, you know, it starts with a sound. It starts with a vibration that carries itself out.
Right. And, you know, these sounds and vibrations can carry on for quite some time. And, you know, you don't need to shift to a new tactic anytime soon. I mean, when something's right, working, let it keep working. You know, a lot of times people get ahead of themselves, and obviously there's a ton of people out there that have lots of solutions. So we don't get into solutions. We just point out the contradictions in society and let that do its work. I tell you something funny.
I want to interrupt you briefly. I had someone write in talking about that they were totally undereducated about sound and pressure waves and stuff like that. And it's not uncommon for people in the society to be undereducated. We're usually specialized in one particular field, like you know a lot about being a barber. But when it comes down to sound, we are vastly undereducated. And I think the elites like it that way. And he was talking about SETI. You know, it's one of these search for extraterrestrial life. They have these giant antennas out west, and they're listening basically for sound light years and light years away, and hearing things light years and light years away. So who knows who's listening for white genocide?
Oh yeah, I love, and you know, of course, your podcast goes into, I mean, some of the incredible ramifications. You know, like you said, people could be talking about this 200 years from now. Certainly, you know, these vibrations go on for a long, long time, and I love it, man. I love being a participant.
Now that I got you off course.
Yeah. Now that we've lost our topic and we're talking about SETI. You know, one other thing I wanted to jump in there with, Horace, is the example I gave earlier of tailgating on topic. That relates a lot to the same dynamic that gets a person ahead of themselves with the white genocide thing. You know, when you've got a model, a mantra that's working, you don't need to start getting ahead of yourself and thinking, well, now it's time to build an organization and things like that. As Bob Whitaker pointed out, these things will come, and actually your skill set that you develop in shaping perception with the mantra talking points will carry you anywhere into the future. And I mean, I'm not smart enough to see exactly what that future is going to be, but once you get the population opposed to white genocide, it's going to be better than it is right
now.
I'd
love to see a statistic in North America on how many white people, especially working class, like incomes under $100,000 a year, how many of them believe white genocide is real. I'd like to see a question like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would.
I wonder how much it would cost to get a polling service to do a question like that among a population group. I'm interested to see what it is. But anyways, more and more, every time I turn around, someone using the term anti-white, someone's doing this, someone's doing that. So moving right along is what we're doing.
Yeah, and in the competition of memes, the anti-racist is a code word for anti-white seems to be outstripping everything else. And, you know, when I do feel creative or feel like doing more, I think of more interesting ways to get that meme out there. And I've talked to you.
Right. Everyone's going to bring something individual, whether it be organization or whether it be some original idea. And you should try anything once. Just don't keep doing something that's not working.
Right. Right.
That's the only thing I say. You know, we're starting to try a brand new art project, a very, very large art project, not animation, but art. And I got two animations in the hoop, too, as well. So I always have all kinds of stuff going on, but we got a new new art project that is officially starting. It's very different. Very different to anything you guys have seen before from White Rab Radio, but it's just for publicity. Now, I don't know how it's going to work, but certainly won't hurt. And anything you do to expose the world to white genocide certainly is not a bad thing.
Oh, and, you know, for the creative sorts, there's endless opportunities with that. I'm not that creative, so I just look at different ways that I can, get the anti-racist as a code word for anti-white into the public eye. But for the creative people, I mean, you look at, like, these videos that you've done, anti-racist Hitler, how whites took over America. I mean, these things are just the mantra reworked into different scenarios. But the potential amount of scenarios out there is endless that you could creatively fit that.
We're mixing some of the White Rabbit Radio concepts with kind of like a real world white genocide concept for a very large art project. But this will be the first time two different artists that are pro whites are hooking up to, like, under the White Rabbit Radio banner to do something original. It's going to be pretty crazy. And it should be interesting to see how it turns out, but we'll see. We'll see. But, you know, that's the type of thing. Try anything once. Try anything. Art is around forever as well. It doesn't matter whether it's music or anything you do. Art is very important because art stays forever. You know, art is around, it can be around indefinitely, you know.
Right. And, you know, so will that video, Anti-Racist Hitler. I just checked on that thing again the other day. I hadn't looked at it in a long time. It's up over 200,000 views now.
And right. There's something most people don't know is we do not have foreign language editions available on that particular copy, because that would be a community guideline violation, because it's been banned in all the European countries. Apparently, I can be arrested in several European countries now for producing it. I don't know what that means, but stay out of Germany is what they say. But anyways, what has happened is different parties have introduced it into foreign languages directly into those countries' YouTube. So it's in YouTube France, it's in YouTube Germany, YouTube Poland. But it has another, probably, I'm guessing, a good 100, 150, maybe even 200,000 in Europe as well, and those independent different, like the one in Germany is right under 50,000. So that's something to keep in mind. Unfortunately, we don't have all the global views under that ones because we can't. You know, it's just kind of like we can't have comments open either. That would help.
You got anything else that we want to hit before we wrap this up? I mean, I think my main thing that I took away from your earlier comments and our conversation here is that, don't try to get smart and change up your tactics. If you got something that's working, just keep working it.
Right. The only thing I see that is kind of like even really surprised me is that of late, the guys over at American Renaissance, the person that runs it, what's his name?
Jared Taylor.
Jared Taylor. That was right on the tip of my tongue. Jared Taylor went almost mantra-like on this one audio recording. It was the closest I've ever heard him talk about genocide and come right up to it. But one thing that I guess that, watered down Whitaker. You don't ever want to water down Whitaker with that replacement displacement stuff, because if you're in a war and they're dishing out the psychological warfare, we're dying. I mean, that's all it is. It's all they're doing is psychological warfare. You don't want to start watering stuff down with displacement, replacement, because it doesn't make any sense. It sounds rather benign. We're being replaced. No, you're being wiped out. There's a whole different ball game. Replacement, displacement. No, just say genocide. White genocide. Keep it simple. Yeah. You don't want to start watering that stuff down. Yeah, I was surprised that Jared Taylor didn't even water it down in that. He's going to genocide. He's going right into our stuff, which is fantastic.
Well, he's Jared Taylor. He's American Renaissance. If Bill O'Reilly's going that direction, you better get moving on it.
That's true. You know, Bill O'Reilly, on any given factor, sounds like he's on the color of crime. Sounds like he's at an American Renaissance conference talking about black and white crime and everything else. So, moving right along. The reason you want something like white genocide is, one, it's honest, it's true, it's direct, it's the law. Two, 5 years ago it sounded very caustic. Now, of course, people are getting used to it. But it moves things further along much more. It's much more aggressive, and it'll move things further along than something mealy-mouthed, like replacement. You know, replacement sounds rather benign. There's nothing benign going on to white children right now.
There's a word that I don't fully understand, but the word is polemic, and someone referred to that as our charge of white genocide as such. I don't get the full meaning of it, but it basically means that, if there's a genocide going on, you can't say, well, that doesn't include me. I just don't really think about politics. You know, if you turn a blind eye to a genocide, you're tacitly supporting it. So you're either pro-white or you're pro-white genocide. If you talk about culture or something, there's a lot of shades of gray there.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. But that's pretty much the last thing we'd want to talk about. Yeah, water down Whitaker. We don't ever want to water that stuff down simply because you'll look bad 5 years from now anyways for doing it. So, and we all have a tendency to do that. Like, is there any easier way we can say this? No, because white genocide comes out pretty harsh.
Yeah.
It does, but that's what moves things along. You're not going to move things along without being extreme. And if someone's at psychological warfare, someone's basically battering you over the head with psychological warfare, and that's precisely what they're doing. It's a war. We're dying. Every day you read about the horrific crimes and everything else. Well, you're going to have to fight fire with fire. There's no point in being half-ass when it comes to your terminology. You know, if the message is white genocide, don't tune it down just because it feels more comfortable. No, the more uncomfortable, actually, when it comes to consistent message, probably the more uncomfortable you are doing it at first, the better you are in regards to sticking with that particular message.
Well, and it gets to the underlying motives of our opposition. You know, our underlying motives of our opposition are not benign. And when they try to attack you and your motives, they're not mealy-mouthed about it. You know, if you've said it many times before, it doesn't matter whether someone's using mustard gas or social engineering, genocide is genocide, and they're not trying to attack you for being a Southerner that eats green beans and listens to bluegrass and eats cornbread. They're attacking you because you're white, and,
right?
And so, you know, let's call a spade a spade. You know, let's
I always found displacement and replacement sounds comfortable at first, but it's also quite confusing to people. White genocide isn't all that confusing. It's, you know, genocide is a lot of things. Confusing isn't one of them.
right. Replacement, displacement, if it would be something that might be feasible if you weren't forcing assimilation, if you just had massive non-white immigration.
Yeah, but if you didn't have the housing and urban development targeting, you know, mapping out all the white communities to force integrate them.
That's genocide, my friends. That's genocide. You can't cut it any other way.
Yeah, exactly. They're not talking replacement.
Right.
That's not exactly what they're going for. But I don't know. But we'll end it right here. This is another Follow the White Rabbit 76. You had me and Truck Roy here for nearly 30 minutes, and you had the first 30 minutes. And this is the follow-up from the Stormfront Conference. And we'll be back with you sometime in the very near future. And you guys can check out the live conferences as they start over at Bug Swarm. And you have many different. I'm guessing there's more than one ways to get on there via Skype. Well, there's going to be one way to get on there that I know of, Skype, and we'll have to see how they go. But check those out. That's it. Life Chatted Radio.